I love scotch.
Have another whiskey.
If you'd like to speak to me in person, press 1. If you'd like to order drugs, press hash.
I had a gentleman in the crowd that was like, tell me how to drink Glenfiddich. And I was like, I will not do that. You drink Glenfiddich how you want to drink Glenfiddich.
Wear a cowboy hat in Los Angeles and look at the amount of looks you get.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. This is the most flamboyant city on earth. You wear a cowboy hat, people look at you like you are like an alien.
The Beatles came on and they picked me up on his shoulder. George Harrison is as close to me as that wall now. I went, all right, George, all right. And he went, cock. And that was the closest I ever came to the Beatles.
We have a whiskey while we...
Yeah, let's do it again.
Cheers,
long.
Cheers. So welcome back to United States of Dramerica, and I'm delighted to have another Scotsman on the podcast. Welcome to the show, the co-founder of event company Light Blue. Welcome, David Balfour.
Hello, how are you?
So I'm all right, I guess. I think for me, this is it's very emotional seeing you across the Zoom airwaves. I'm in, obviously, in my garage in Los Angeles, you're in Dubai. And it's emotional for me because the last time I went to a bar or a restaurant was with you. But unfortunately, it was almost a year ago, which says a lot about how things have played out. So it's nice to see you, although I think you've had the ability to go to bars a little bit more than I have, I think, in the past year.
Yes, yes. Sadly, that was pretty much the last time we kind of seen each other, which is A, is a shame because I'm not in LA right now. B, yeah, I'm in Dubai. We kind of left, I think it was March when everything was kind of closing up. And obviously we went through that whole lockdown, but Dubai kind of recovered very, very quickly. You know, our numbers were down in terms of COVID, and Dubai is still a bit of a bubble. You know, they shut things down very, very quickly to allow things to come back to a bit of normality. So yeah, it's there's definitely worse places to be in. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, obviously your native Scotland. I imagine that there are slightly fewer outdoor activities to be done in mid to early January than there are in Dubai or even in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I was looking at the temperature yesterday, and I was seeing that, you know, LA, you're going up to like 28 degrees.
Yeah.
Dubai, we're about 26. Glasgow was like 3.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I know where I'd rather be.
Yeah, and that's not accounting for whatever wind chill would make it feel like minus 15.
Absolutely. When we were planning to go to the beach at the weekends, I think they're planning to stay in at home and watch a bit of a Coronation Street in Emmerdale.
Yeah. So look, you're a Scotsman in Dubai. We met because you were thinking of coming out to Los Angeles. So you work in the events business and you do, you know, the really good events that people want to be doing, like the, you know, very high end for extraordinary clients, huge showpieces. And, you know, I've seen sort of some of the examples, some of the stuff you've done over there. And obviously you were looking to bring that to LA, which before March of last year was exactly the sort of place where people would want to do incredibly showy and impressive and innovative events. What has that world been like for you in the last year, given your whole thing was about bringing people together for experiences?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're a creative experience agency, so we really look at how can we bring the brand to life in a physical space. And that's really, really hard for us, you know, with lockdown. I mean, we were basically shut off, you know, in terms of the agency and what we were known for doing from a regional perspective or even a global perspective is, like you said, putting on these big shows, these big events, attracting large numbers of people, influencers, media, key opinion leaders. And you know, we went into complete shutdown. So it was a real case of, right, okay, you know, our brands still need to be out there. We still need to be doing things for the brands that we work with. And it's how do we do that now? And it's, you know, we're looking at, and we've delivered virtual events for, you know, the likes of Sephora. We've got a couple of other ones coming up now. We've done some content shoots for the likes of Burberry. And only now we've actually delivered our first live event for Fenty down at the Dubai Mall. But, you know, I think there's a real burning desire to get back out there and do live and be at live events. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Dubai is a bit of a bubble and, you know, good for us, not great for other locations and other agencies. And that's, you know, a big part of why I'm kind of not back out in LA at the moment.
So when you did your first live event the other day,
yeah,
how different was it? Is it all plexiglass and masks and 6 feet apart and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, you know, so there's a real, you know, everything that we looked at doing was visually impactful, contactless. So we're trying to make it, you know, as easy as possible so that consumers who are coming through the space, so that they don't have to touch anything. So we have QR codes leading them to, you know, on their own phones. They can engage on a microsite, have fun gaming. And it was a bit of a navigation tool for the consumers. So they were able to go through the brand and the journey that we wanted them to go through. But it was very much a, how can I put it, like IKEA, right? And I'm not a fan of IKEA. You're pretty much told where to go and how to go and when to go to it.
Yeah.
You know, so IKEA, they've got it right in a certain way, because I always end up leaving the store with lots of things that they even need or wanted.
Yeah.
So you have that kind of IKEA effect. And that's what we actually created within our space, was you had to go through certain levels and certain experiences to go through everything. And, you know, you get to win prizes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the media event that we hosted, you know, we had over 200 media event, over 200 media influencers, key opinion leaders turning up. But again, yeah, that was an opened air space restaurant with dividers, hand sanitizers everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's now going to become the norm, sadly.
Yeah, it is. But because when you say, it's interesting, when you say, you know, you think there's an appetite for live events, I guess the question is there? Because, you know, as I sit in my garage in Los Angeles, having not been to a bar for nearly a year, there's a part of me that's desperate to do stuff. Now, you know, as soon as sport's safe, I'm going to go and watch, you know, football, soccer, anything. You know, I'm going to go to a casino as soon as I think, you know, as soon as the vaccine's worn off, I'm going into the casino. You know, there's stuff I want to do, but there's also things I don't think I want to do anymore. Like, I used to be on the circuit for doing lots of sort of generic receptions around the sort of British community. And some of those events, I'm just not sure I want to spend my time doing that. So do you think that obviously the sorts of things you're doing are quite special? So do you think because what you're doing is special, people are going to flood out? Or do you think there's going to be a residual hangover of people thinking, you know what, I can't be bothered with crowds and I can't be bothered to go out. Actually, I'll experience this stuff digitally.
Yeah, I think that there's something definitely in that. And the way that we're going to be approaching all events moving forward is that there is going to be a hybrid turn to it. You know, we are looking at all the events that we create, either, you know, when we come up with original IPs for certain brands or government entities, we are looking at how can we make it an online experience and an offline physical experience. So I think that, you know, that is going to occur, because there is going to be people are, you know, people will be scared to go out. you know, and we've kind of seen that. And, you know, even in our office, there we have people that, because of their partners, they may have some, you know, illnesses or underlying things. You know, they're scared to come into the office at the moment because they might have to take the tube, the metro, to the office, or some people cab it in, or, you know, take the Uber. So I think there's definitely going to be that scenario, but with every event that's kind of that has taken place so far in Dubai and or the UAE, they've been sold out. You know, we had last weekend Jack Whitehall in Dubai for two nights, both sold out. The UFC took place this weekend, sold out. I tried to get tickets through every contact that I knew that for McGregor fight. And, you know, they completely sold out, and I've gotten absolutely zero chance of getting that ticket. So there is a real burning desire to get back out there. But I think at the same time, you know, we're going to have to play our cards right when we do look at these events to ensure that we have the numbers.
Yeah. Well, look, if you can't get tickets for something in Dubai, given your connections, then it really must be very hard to get anything.
Absolutely.
So what are things look like from a budget point of view? Because this is something that I find fascinating. So I was at a whiskey launch. I won't name the brand, but it's become a bit infamous now, but there was a launch of a whiskey in LA that I went to at some point before March of last year. And it was an extraordinary event it was one of these sort of classic Hollywood mansions. And it was a $250,000 event. Now, you know, that obviously is what money is spent on big events. And I'm sure, obviously, you've worked on launches for products over there with even bigger budgets. But, you know, that's a lot of money when industries are struggling a little bit. And also, for that much money, you know, you could send a whiskey bottle and a cleverly curated dinner and a whole set of special glasses to the house of an influencer for, a few hundred dollars, and they could put stuff out on social media, which might have the same impact as the bigger event. So are you seeing brands think, I don't want to spend all our money on a sort of one showpiece when I can do it digitally and reach people in a different place? Or are they still content to do things as they had done before March of last year?
I think that's a really good point. I think there is a real misunderstanding of how to play in the digital space when it comes to, you know, kind of that whole live interaction. We delivered something for Sephora lately where we had 17 brands from all over the world, Los Angeles, Australia, Seoul. We had 150 hours worth of content that we delivered to 400 plus media, key opinion leaders, and influencers. And that was just a private event for them. Now, the cost of flying 17 of these brands over to Dubai, putting them all in hotels, running a live event to get those 400 consumers to come into the space would have been probably about three times the price of what they paid for. Now, not only that, but this now lives on because it's online.
Yeah.
So you can feed into it rather than, oh, we have to do another event, another live physical event. So now this virtual space that we've created for them lives on, where all the content, so that site has over 150 hours worth of content that is available to anyone, anywhere, you know. So, and it's also a site that they can reuse and update their fans. So in one sense, yes, I think you know, brands are really being able to understand how they can play in that digital space. But in most hands, you know, I think there's people still want to have that physical engagement, yeah, and that touch feel. And I don't think you will ever get away from that. You'll never experience something better than being live. I mean, you know, if you look at your, you never hear someone saying, yeah, oh, that song that I heard in the car, you know, that was a great moment. You know, no, you'd be saying that song that we heard at Glastonbury when REM came out and played, that moment in time, well, you'll never forget.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, you know, you always remember those live moments, you know, being at a Champions League final, being at a World Cup or a Rugby World Cup, never mind watching it on the TV, it's not the same.
Yeah. Now, actually, talking of experiences, I'm very rude because it's 10:50 p.m. your time and I haven't let you have a whiskey yet. So let's do the whiskey part of this. What have you got over there, David?
Right. Well, I have a very nice Glengoyne.
Very good.
So it's a Glengoyne, 18 years old. So as you know, Glengoyne, or you might not know, it's called it's the Valley of the Gee in Gaelic.
Yeah.
So so as you know, there are four, or if you want to be pedantic about it, regions. You've got the Scotch regions in terms of the Highlands, the Lowlands, Speysides, and the Islands. So even though I enjoy, you know, whiskies from all over, but I think my favorite at the moment is the Glengoyne. So for much of my life, I actually lived only 15 minutes away from that distillery in the north of Glasgow. So there's quite a few little emotional ties with this brand. And, it's Glengoyne, it's a lowland malt. However, the distillery is just north of that old magic line. So the whiskey bonds themselves are actually on the wrong side of the road.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. So good choice. I think we, on episode 3 of this podcast, we had Glengoyne 10 as our whiskey with our guest who was from Glasgow, Ross King MBE. And I remember that episode particularly because we drank the entire bottle of whiskey while recording the episode. So I also have an emotional bond to Glengoyne, but for slightly different reasons, which was my hangover the next day. So I try and pair my whiskies with my guests, and I was trying to think of the best way of doing it. And I was thinking, you know, do I do a Glasgow whiskey because of you? And then I thought, no, what I'm going to do actually is have a whiskey to celebrate the fact that the last time I had a drink was in a bar was with you. So it was last year, it was the citizenship ceremony celebration for a mutual friend of ours, David Laird, who was a guest on this podcast a few weeks ago, who is the luxury specialist for William Grant. So it feels appropriate to drink a luxury William Grant whiskey. So one of my favourite, which is a Balvenie 15 single barrel, which was given to me by William Grant, actually, when I finished my time with the government at one of the whiskey tastings we organised. So I've only had this once before in my own bottle. So I'm just pouring myself a second glass. I'm only going to have half a measure because it's 10:50 in the morning for me, and obviously full measure before 11 o'clock, even in lockdown. So two very good whiskies, an 18-year-old Glengoyne and a 15-year-old Balvenie. So
very nice.
Cheers to you, David.
Cheers to you.
Oh, amazing. So when we saw each other, I remember it was a funny night because nobody was wearing a mask, obviously. We're in a crowded bar, yeah, passing past people, as one does. And we ordered sort of shared food for everybody, which was great. But the idea, yes, now of you know, taking an onion ring and dipping it in a dip that someone else has dipped in when they're standing less than 6 feet away from you and no one's wearing a mask feels like a very alien way of living. But that was a great night. And we drank a lot of whiskey that I remember, including lots of Irish whiskies. So
yeah, that's right.
But that evening, one of the discussions we were having is, you know, you were asking about life in LA because you were thinking about coming out here, and we were talking about, you know, schools and practical things and all that sort of stuff. What was the impetus for you about potentially moving to the US for the events sort of business?
So I've been in Dubai for 16 years now. I started Light Blue 13 years ago. And, you know, we've been coming to Los Angeles for about 4 years in the summer. We've been coming, you know, as a family for, we spend about a month every time we come over. And we kind of just fell in love with it. It was, it's very similar to Dubai in certain aspects, you know, in terms of the way of life, where, you know, you've got the beach life, but you also have the high-end restaurant bars, you have the shopping districts, and the kind of the lifestyle mirrored Dubai to a certain extent. And also my two little ones were born in Dubai, and, you know, I traveled as a youngster. I was actually born in São Paulo, when my dad used to work for Caterpillar. And so, you know, I've traveled around, and I wanted the kids to have that kind of educational background of being in traveling and seeing other parts of the world and cultures. So with that in my mind, and LA being quite a similar set to the type of brands that we work with, you know, we do a lot of luxury, beauty, fashion, sports, entertainment type brands. So for us, it kind of felt that would be the natural environment for us to grow. So, you know, I think LA, I suppose if I looked at it again with, you know, my heart would always go to LA, my head would go to New York. I think there's probably more business to be made in New York than LA, but I wouldn't live in New York. LA is definitely where I would see myself kind of living.
What, from an events point of view, I mean, I think, you know, pre-COVID, there were extraordinary events here, and I was lucky enough to attend lots of them, which were, you know, the sorts of scale of event that, you know, like this whiskey launch that I went to, which would be the sorts of thing that your business would be able to do here. What do you think? Obviously, you know, you've seen it open up a little bit in Dubai. Do you think, and from what you know around the industry, do you think the American appetite for restarting is similar, that people will just be desperate to return to things whenever California lets us?
That I'm unsure of, actually. I think, you know, and I was talking to a friend of mine who used to own a restaurant just north of Los Angeles, and she was asking me what's my thoughts on everything that's happening from afar. And as much as we do get a lot of the information coming through, and we, you know, CNN and, you know, BBC, Sky News, etc., to actually understand what is going on the ground, I think you still need to have those boots on the ground. And, you know, we do have Felicia, who's one of my senior marketing managers, still in Los Angeles. And I think there's definitely a bit of people aren't exactly bought into it yet, I don't think. You know, I think people are still scared of going out, and, you know, especially in LA, where the numbers are ridiculously high compared to other locations in the States. But I think at the same time, I think you get a bit of everything, right? You get people that don't want to wear masks, and then you get people who are on the flip side wearing masks, shields, gloves, and everything else, and not leaving the house.
Yep.
You know, there's going to be a happy medium somewhere. And I think Los Angeles has got enough of a population for live events to come back. whether it be, let's say, at the bowl as an example, you know, that's probably a nice example because you've got the stalls within the space. Mm. So you know, from a socially distanced event, yeah, you'll probably be able to run those events there where you go in with your groups of friends and you rent those stalls, you know, you book those stalls and you have, you know, spacings between it. I think it will be harder when it comes to something like ComplexCon, which is the sneaker festival that was held in Long Beach. I think that would be harder to put on because, you know, they have their big music event as part of their sneaker festival, and there's hundreds of thousands of people there, you know. So being able to socially distance in a location like that would be virtually impossible. Mm. So events will happen, they just won't look the same.
It's tricky because I look back at, I mean, I've been to so many different events, but I remember one particularly interesting one was, I think it was during the LA Auto Show, and Jaguar were launching something, and they rented a warehouse, and we went along, and it was a great event, and there was cars and half cars and videos and stuff. But one thing I remember, it was rammed because for things like the Auto Show and other big events, obviously lots of people are in town. And you could barely move. And I remember, and obviously this is pre-COVID, I remember thinking, God, I'm getting a bit old for sort of queuing up to get to a drink at the bar and all that sort of stuff. But it was, you know, it was a great event, but there were almost too many people there. Yeah. And I think now an event like that, I mean, you just, obviously you couldn't do it. It would actually be, it would be more fun. You know, if we're in a post-vaccine world where it's safe, but they still have to create some distance. So it would be, you know, limited entry, fewer people invited, but still in that sort of space. Actually, it might be a nicer event to attend. So there is a part of me that sort of quite likes the idea of a bit of social distance and a bit of space and a bit less sort of cramming into a small area that would be quite an appealing future of events.
Absolutely. You know, actually, I went to see Jimmy Carr in Dubai.
Hmm.
And apart from that, he was absolutely hilarious, and I would 100% recommend him to anyone who's not easily offended. Yeah. But the way that the Trade Center ran their event was actually, I actually really enjoyed it because I had no one sitting beside me apart from my wife. The drinks cart was going up and down the aisles between everyone that was sitting.
Mm.
So, you know, every time we ran out of, you know, beer or wine, they were literally there and, you know, with bags of chips, you know, rather than having to go outside to the concourse and queue with everyone else, they were actually just serving it. And they had so many of these waiters going around with the carts that no one had to get up. And it was, you know, it was sold out. It was another, I think they ended up doing three nights in Dubai. And, you know, it was a really well put on, you know, they had everything that you needed from, you know, checking that the masks were, you had your masks on, temperature checks, down to you where you parked your car. Everything was, you know, really well thought out. So I actually quite enjoyed being at my, that, and that was my first event in COVID times. And I actually quite liked it. You know? It was actually a really nice experience.
Maybe it's reflective of our age, but I think, yeah, this sort of slightly less crowded event feels quite nice. I was looking the other day, I was thinking about Disneyland. So obviously we've got Disney just up the road from us, and we've been a couple of times, and it's a good day out and the kids love it, but obviously they've been shut for all the way through this. It's now actually a vaccination site, which is a huge irony. Yeah. And it's ridiculous that the happiest place on earth might actually be even happier than usual because they're providing vaccinations for people. But whenever they go back to normal, you know, they've cancelled all their annual pass programs because they think that, you know, they're gonna have to do it differently. And sort of timed entry, shorter lines, fewer people in the park, although it makes their business model trickier from a participant point of view, I rather like the idea of, even if I have to pay a little bit more, not having to queue up with people and, you know, not having to do the long lines at the show. So maybe this sort of post-COVID world of live events will be maybe only for people over 40, but it might be a more pleasant environment to enjoy oneself.
I mean, I totally agree with that. The issue that I would have with that is the price point, you know, where, you know, as a young Dan going to his first festival, you know, yeah, you could afford it because you'd be buying those entry tickets. Young Dan wouldn't be able to maybe afford the kind of what we would see as the normal tickets now, but it would probably be at the same price as a VIP ticket.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's wins and you know, for some people, and there's going to be, you know, losses in others. But I guess that's when you start, you know, let's say if it's a music concert that you can go and see, you know, Coldplay or whoever it may be, because it's a limited amount of tickets and seats. But surely then there's a virtual experience that you'll be able to see online to probably more people sell your tickets to at a much reduced rate.
Yeah.
Then you, and one of the things that I have kind of seen people, you know, kind of talking about is these viewing parties. A bit like back in the day when, you know, Mike Tyson was coming on fighting Frank Bruno, and everyone be throwing in their fivers to get their parents to go and buy box office to go and so we can all watch the fight, because there was no streaming back.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, a friend of mine runs was a hard ticketing company, and is now they're doing a lot of these streaming events where, you know, the future of concerts is maybe that you have an unlimited audience. So you have some people there and some people at home. And again, it's something that's, there'll be some people who actually quite like the idea. And although you're right, you know, you don't remember things in the same way as an experience if you're not there, there's also a new world where people have learned the benefits of, you know, getting takeout and drinking their own booze at home and enjoying an event in a way that they
hadn't
before. I mean, I have drunk some amazing whiskies in people's gardens in the past year, much more than I would normally have done. In fact, the reason this 15-year-old single fill is single barrel is open is because we had someone around. We went to Dave's Hot Chicken in North Hollywood, which is my new favourite sort of takeout place. They sat at the other end of our newly bought garden table, and we had a nice meal, and then we opened up all my most expensive whiskies. Well, in the old days, we would have gone out and drunk cheap beer. And I think I do miss restaurants, but there's also a part of me that in the future, I might do a bit more garden eating and drinking. And if I can watch the concert at a fraction of the price while drinking my own whiskey at home, I think I might do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's you know, the ability now to stream anything and, you know, and be at your comfort, your own home, and ordering the food that you want and having the drinks that you want. There's definitely going to be that part to it. And sharing moments like that, you know, I remember, mind you, you know, even when the Prince Harry and Meghan got married, we had an event in our house that everyone came over to watch it. So it's not a new thing. It's just different.
Different. So just, I'll ask, going back to, let's take a break from COVID. I think I've had enough of COVID for today. Let's talk about live events. So live events are amazing to attend. So I've got two questions. So the first one is, can you tell us about probably your favorite event you've organized in terms of the experience? Obviously, notwithstanding, I don't want you to upset the brands that weren't at that one. But if you can tell me about your favourite one, and then I'm going to ask you the opposite question, which is, as an organiser of live events, obviously the risk of live events is things can start going wrong in real time. So I'd love to hear about a near miss, because you're bound to have had one where something nearly went wrong. But let's start with the positive. I think it's the right way of doing it. So tell me about your favourite thing that you've organised and why.
Right. Okay. So there's two that come into mind, and I don't know if I can split them. only because there are two very different challenges. So I'll go through it quickly. So one was Tom Ford. We created the private blend experience in Dubai, where we created a giant, huge, big black box in Burj Khalifa Park. And it was a full experience from sight, smell, touch, kind of sensory kind of moments. And the reason, one of the reasons why I absolutely loved it was Tom Ford, obviously, it's a high-end luxury brand, and they kind of elevated Light Blue into this new space. Bear in mind, we had 6 weeks from pitch to delivery, and we had to create this out of pretty much nothing. And we completely turned that around and owned the space, owned social space by creating a huge amount of content. So every person that came through our space had 7 pieces of unique content delivered to them within 2 hours. That was Tom Ford level, you know, so they look beautiful, they're smiling, eyes open, everything that you can imagine that that was happening to ensure that the best picture of that person that came through our space, that was getting done. We had 20 editors back of house going through every single person that was walking in the experience, and everyone had their own RFID tag. So as you walk through, I think we had 7 different zones, you would tap the RFID and we would know exactly where you were within the experience. So that was something that was, you know, a fantastic experience from start to finish. Hectic. We didn't even know we were even going to be in the running for this. So that was something that was, you know, an outstanding piece of work that we delivered for our client. The reason why I split that one is because we delivered something for SoDXB. SoDXB is a high-end fashion sneaker festival. And the reason why I love this one was because we had 6 brands that we took to the space, and we had 3 days to run it all. So from full production, talent management, social content, running of these spaces. So the brands we looked after there were Burberry, Puma, Kenzo, Deliveroo, Kappa, Birkenstock. So all 6 brands, different owners, different locations worldwide that we had to deal with. And we had a setup of some of the biggest spaces at SoDXB, and running it through our kind of smallish team to be awarded, best stand, being up for nominations globally. You know, right now I think we're up for Windows Wear with Burberry for their stand design and production. So that gave me a different sense of why I loved it so much, I guess, you know, where the whole company was completely involved in that, from, you know, for the whole 3 days of this live event where we had over 40,000 consumers coming in. So that's why I can't split it. So those were my two favorite ones.
I'll let you have two. You're the guest. You can do what you like. I have to say, sneakers I find extraordinary. So yeah, I'm trying not to sound old. I've already said that I don't like crowds, but the whole thing with sneakers, you know, I am aware of it as a cultural phenomenon. I've got friends who've got sneaker collections. You know, the whole like you don't wear them thing. And yeah. There's whole companies that have, you know, there's like trading platform, blockchain-based trading platforms for high-end sneaker exchange and so on. So it's, you know, it's a whole world, but it's sort of, I guess it's slightly lost on me, I'm afraid. But you must obviously understand that world, and it is one of the, well, presumably still fastest growing sort of luxury products and collectible areas.
Yes, massively. I do like my sneakers. I am into street culture. A lot of podcasts that I listen to, you know, like the Business of Hype with Staples. I love trainers. I did have to get rid of quite a lot, which I gave to charity rather than sell it. I think I must have, I mean, I'm not a huge sneaker collector because I don't have the space for it. So I've got 60 pairs roughly that I change and wear. So every other day I'm wearing a different pair.
Wow. You're like the Imelda Marcos of sneakers. You got 60 pairs of sneakers. You say that you don't have many. That feels like a lot. And do you wear them all? Or do you have any sort of ones that are in a box and will be forever?
I actually do have. I've got two there in a box that I won't wear. One is a pair of Jordan 6s.
Okay.
And the reason why I won't wear them is because I don't think I suit them. Okay. So I've just kind of kept it in a box, and I'll probably sell it, or not for profit, but I'll just sell it at whatever the price I bought it for. I'm not into buying and selling for profit. Is for me, it's wrong. You should always wear the shoes.
Yeah.
I do have a pair of football boots which I haven't worn, the limited edition Copa Mundials that came out maybe about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I haven't worn them because I haven't found a pitch that I'd like to grace them on.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I see that.
I will wear them. I've been playing indoor five-a-sides or AstroTurf, and I don't want to ruin it on AstroTurf.
Yeah.
So, I'm waiting for the perfect pitch for me to bring them out.
Noted. Well, that's quite exciting. Yeah, I think I've got five pairs of trainers. I got like my daily wear ones, my tennis ones, my football ones, which I play on AstroTurf with. My golf ones are sort of more trainers than they are golf shoe. And my running ones, and that's it. Maybe I need to buy another 55 pairs. I guess I've got, I've got probably 80 bottles of whiskey. So I guess I've done my, and I'm very much open it. And like, obviously whiskey actually a bit like trainer sneakers. There's a lot of people who obviously buy them and drink them. And there's a lot of people who buy them and keep them. And I'm very much even the nicest bottles I've got, which are worth, a few hundred dollars, they get drunk. I'm not interested in buying whiskey to collect, even though it's a great way of making long-term money. It's not for me. That's not the point of whiskey. And obviously very much for me, not the point of sneakers, because I think.
Totally agree with that.
Right. So tell me about your your nearest miss when you're trying to do a live event and something goes wrong in real time.
So actually it was in Los Angeles.
Oh,
it was our first event that we did. For Montclair a year last November. So we had we took over a car park space at Maxfields on Melrose, where we created this very cool kind of urban structure stage. We had an Airstream van from the nice people down at Elefante who came and ran the bar for us. And everything was going great. We had Summer Walker coming on live on the stage. We had a couple of DJs, DJ Kittens, and someone else that I forgot. I'm too old for that, that's probably why. And everything was kind of running smoothly, or as smoothly as we can, because it was our first event in WeHo. So you know, we kind of camped out at the WeHo offices to get all the permits that we had to get. And then the day before the event was going live, and once we had all the permits, everything was in line, we're ready to roll, we got a notification that Usher was coming to our event. And as much as that sounds like an amazing thing for that to happen, deep down inside me, I'm going, please, no, because our permit doesn't allow any celebrities to come. So, and it's we had no time to reapply for a permit. So we kind of had to roll with it. So we had to create a VIP space for Usher to come. Bear in mind that we knew that he would max be only there for about half an hour. So we came up with a plan to get him in through the back door so that none of the influencer celebrities would come or really kind of pay attention to him. So I was all earpieced up. Team were inside. I was on the outside. I was with the fire marshal, someone from the police, the noise reduction director of WeHo, and we're all standing outside. And as Usher was coming in, my job was to distract the three of them. So I put on my thickest Glaswegian accent and entertained for the next 20 minutes. And ended up going for a little walk around WeHo to ensure that the sound pollution wasn't or was to the acceptable level of WeHo Council.
Extraordinary.
So yeah, that was my very near miss of something going wrong.
I feel silly for not knowing that you needed a celebrity permit. It's a very LA permit to need to have. So you have to have a special permit if you're going to have celeb, just because of all of the kerfuffle that it creates.
Absolutely, yes. All the paparazzi that will come outside. So then you need more police. Then you need more fire marshals and probably more toilets as well. Who knows?
Amazing. So you sneaked Usher in the back door and you sneaked him out the back door and now you...
Yeah, he came in for about 15 minutes and then left.
Amazing. So obviously, yeah. I don't know if the fire marshal from WeHo listens to this podcast. I hope not, I guess. extraordinary. Oh, brilliant. So that's a great story. Very good. Well, I'm glad Usher didn't ruin your party. That would have been, for somebody who was looking to move out here to start a new business, as you were at the time, it would have been unfortunate to breach the permits. Is it? I assume it's a fine rather than an arrest if you get it wrong.
Yeah, it's just a fine, thankfully. I think it's quite a hefty fine, which I'm sure the client wouldn't have paid. We would have probably have had to pick it up. But it was just one of those things that everything was, you know, going right. Everything we thought it's a bit too smooth. And then, yeah, Usher's coming. We're like, amazing, great. No, not good.
Yeah, well, you could have asked Usher's people to pay the fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Brilliant. Right, look, this is great. Last question, David, because it's actually now nearly midnight where you are and nearly lunchtime where I am. So if you could drink any whiskey with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be, what would it be, and where would it be?
Okay. Let's go. Does it have to be actually... A friend of mine is, they're creating a new whiskey.
Okay, go on.
Yeah.
It could be, I mean, look, last week's guest had the most expensive whiskey in the world, the Macallan 1927. So I think people can have fancy whiskeys. So that can include whiskeys that aren't on the market. There's nothing wrong with that.
Great. So it's called, and he used to go to my school, so I've actually caught up with him as he's... staying away from the UK because of COVID. So it's called Wolf Craig. And so they're right at the start of their funding. And my friend's dad used to be one of the head guys at White & Mackay back in the day. And he's kind of involved in this. So that's something that I've quite liked to try because he was talking about it nonstop to me. So I'll quite like to try this Wolf Creek when it won't be out for another 5 years, I think. Okay. He said. So with a person who I like to drink it with, dead or alive?
Dead or alive?
Actually, it would have to be Alex Ferguson, Sir Alex Ferguson.
Very good.
Yeah, I think, and ideally, I would like it to be at the old Highbury Stadium, watching Arsenal against Man United.
That's interesting. So obviously, as a Hibs fan, you've picked a Aberdeen and Man United and Scotland manager rather than... Did he have any association with your club, or you just admire him as a...
He is one of the I do admire him. I've read his books, I've watched a lot of his YouTube interviews, and I think just the way that, obviously I'm a massive football fan, failed footballer and all that, and I think the way he kind of manages people and the people around him, you know, so he can manage up, he can manage down, and I think it's just the way that he comes across for me is just someone who's quite inspirational, you know, a real leader of men and women. So I think, you know, even though I'm a hippie, Alex Ferguson would be someone that I would love to have a whiskey with. And as every Scot, you need an English team. So I'd back in 87, I'd picked Arsenal.
Very good. So I, much to my annoyance, when I joined the British government and was posted to Los Angeles, I discovered that one of the big events we do every year, or we did before the pandemic, was an Oscars party. So we do a big event where we celebrate all the British nominees for the Oscars, both the actors and obviously behind the camera talent, of which there's always a lot. And I discovered that the year before, so I went to four of these in a row when I was part of the diplomatic service, but the year before I arrived, Alex Ferguson had pitched up. It was one of his, apparently his retirement things that he always wanted to do was go out to the Oscars. And he couldn't, obviously, during the season. But I think the year after he retired, he came out to LA. I assume he knew somebody to get into the real Oscars, but he turned up at our government Oscars party, and a lady who worked for me called Angela Ferguson, who was also from Air, but no relation, was very excited to meet the more famous Ferguson from Air. So I missed him by, because I mean, I'm no fan of Man United, but I would have loved to meet him for the reasons that he is. I interviewed him when I was a journalist very, very long time ago. Selby Town played Manchester United in a pre-season friendly, and Fergie was there. And I interviewed him I must have been a 21-year-old sports journalist. And I don't think I probably treated him with the deference I should have done. I'd like to have met him as a slightly wiser, older person. But there you go. Well, very good. Great choice for a whiskey. Brilliant. Anyway, David, thank you for joining me. I'll let you go to bed now or continue drinking your whiskey. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I hope my next drink in a bar is with somebody other than you, no offence, only because I don't want to have to wait until you come back from Dubai. But hopefully when you try again in Los Angeles, when a world of events is possible here, we can meet up, and hopefully it's before Wolf Craig is ready to drink.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
I love scotch. Scotch. Scotch.
And don't forget to not just follow us on Twitter and Instagram at US of Dramerica, but also ask us questions and comment and say nice things.
And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if the mood takes you, you can leave us a review, as feedback is always welcome.
And drink whiskey. Sláinte.